Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Only in Law School podcast presented by the Comedians at Law. I am your host, Matt Ritter, and with me this week is Matt Storrs.
Hey there, everybody.
Hey, Matt. So this is your first time doing the new and improved Only in Law School podcast. Matt is a recent graduate of Arizona Summit Law School. He's actually one of the lucky ones who has a job.
Yeah, I'm very lucky.
And he's been touring with us for the past couple years, doing comedy and the law, and having some fun times with it.
Absolutely. Really so, great times.
So what we like to do, Matt, with everybody who's, you know, first host episode on the podcast is, why don't you give our listeners a little anecdote about your law school experience?
Absolutely. Yeah. So with Arizona Summit, we were basically in a high-rise building, so we had about like five floors. And after every class, there'd be just a huge rush for the elevators and people wouldn't, you know, be going up and down. So to combat that, you know, with people trying to go on coffee runs, the library started offering coffee for $1 to anybody that, you know, wanted to walk down there and do it, you know, to cut down on the elevator traffic. Only thing was, they wouldn't take card or anything like that. You had to have change or $1.
They wouldn't give you change if you had a $5 bill?
Yeah, no, so you had to have exact, like, $1.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so then basically what you're getting is, like, people walking around the library to, you know, people trying to study being like, hey, do you have change for a $5? Do you have change for a $5? Or the people that, you know, are just straight up begging, like, hey, do you have any change so I can get a cup of coffee before my next class?
So they reduced law students to begging for change to get coffee.
Exactly, because they couldn't go downstairs. They didn't have enough time to get downstairs and get all the way back up before class would start. So that was definitely an interesting aspect of my law school career, for sure.
Also set a lot of law students up for a future in begging for change.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just good. That's just a good mindset and structure to put forth so you can pay back your student loans, in my opinion.
Well, also, you know, I mean, there's that argument that, hey, law school doesn't prepare you for your life. So it sounds like Summit was doing a good job.
Right. I mean, that's a strong skill to have, in my opinion.
To be able to walk up to somebody and just be like, I need some change. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, and now you have a job.
I do.
You're one of the employed.
I am. I'm very, very lucky. I work for Hernandez Family Law here in Phoenix. So I am a family law attorney and getting acclimated to that. I've only been working there for just about a month now, but it's pretty awesome for sure.
Yeah, my mom did family law. I think that's I think when you're in law school, not a lot of people think about family law as a career path, but there's always jobs.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's always jobs, and, you know, if you can handle the emotional aspect of it, it's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, I've only cried, like, two or three times thus far, so
well,
I think I'm
good.
Doing it.
You know, I mean, us men, you know, we try to be so stoic all the time. It's good to get a good cry in every now and then.
Oh, absolutely. It makes you feel human. It's good.
Yeah. Why did you cry? What did you cry over?
Oh, just, you know, just the aspects of, like, the, you know, like, when you have somebody come in as a potential new client and they just present this story to you of like just how bad and how like manipulative and everything like their significant other is. And then, you know, you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, yay, like, you know, you need to give us this amount of money if we're going to be able to try your case. Like, it's, you know, it seems kind of involved. And then they're like, yeah, well, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. Is there anything else I can do? And it's like, no, man, like, we want to help you.
Yeah, right. You know, we're not a public interest law center, huh?
Right. And it's like we can, you know, we'll direct them to like public interest and everything like that. But, you know, whether or not they're going to follow up, you know, we have no idea. You know what I mean? So it can be kind of hard in that regard.
Yeah, it's tough racket. So we had some interesting stories this week in the legal sphere.
Yeah, we did. That's for sure.
Should we jump into a couple of them?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this first story is just too funny. I mean, funny, but scary. A Kansas City murder suspect wants to cover up his neck tattoo prior to trial because he's worried it's going to bias the jury. Guess what his neck tattoo says?
Murder?
Ding, ding, ding. He's
Yeah.
hired. So if you're listening out there, so let me restate that. There is a Kansas murder suspect who wants to cover up a tattoo that runs across his entire neck that says the word murder.
Exactly. And it's mirrored, so it's red rum. It's like straight out of The Shining.
Yeah, it is some psychopath stuff.
Really, and like if you get a chance, take a look at his mugshot. Like he, you know, he's even got like the teardrop tattoo, and he's just got like, you know, crazy eyes, you know, like super wide. Like this person, if you saw them, you would like, even if you didn't, if they were wearing a turtleneck, you would think that they would want to kill you.
Yeah, he doesn't look like somebody who was too concerned with people misjudging him.
Yeah, not at all. Like it's a newfound concern.
Yeah, it seems like he's gone through his entire life not really too concerned if he was going to, you know, have people look at him a certain way.
Absolutely, man. Oh, man. Yeah, he's not I mean, like it like the rationale behind trying to cover it up. They want to either cover it up or remove it because they say it's too large of a tattoo to like cover up at trial. But it's like then you're just going to have like a giant like black like redacted line on your neck, you know what I mean? Like that's going to be just as weird.
That's pretty funny. What if he was like, "Yeah, it stands for redaction. I wanted to go to law school."
Yeah, right? That was my life goal, and now I'm here, right?
Yeah. So it's just a big one, big redaction. You know what I think is interesting is, you know, if he wants to get the tattoo removed, they won't let him do it in jail because, according to Kansas's code, tattoo artists can only practice at licensed establishments.
Oh yeah, so they'd have to ship him out to get it done.
Right, and so, the sheriff refuses to transport him to a licensed tattoo facility.
That's awesome.
I mean, here's the thing. They're kind of sticking it to this guy, which I think is bad for a multitude of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One is because he's going to have grounds for appeal if they stick it to him on this front.
Right.
And two, I don't know. I don't think the public should have to pay for him getting a tattoo removed or anything like that. But if he wants to do it, you know, it's not like he's covering up evidence at trial because you can't really. I mean, look, the argument to be made is that it is biasing just to judge somebody by a tattoo, even though it does say murder on it. I don't know. It's tough because, you know, you're allowed to call into question their character in something like this. Does a tattoo that says murder define your character in any way?
Probably. I think that, you know, if you. I mean, it at least gives a demonstration that you have at least poor decision-making in your tattoo choices.
Right. I mean, yes, terrible, terrible tattoo decision-making. But, you know, should that, you know, is that akin to having testimony, you know, saying that this guy's a monster? You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't think the guy, you know, based on reading the facts of the case, I don't think the guy, even taking the murder stuff out, like if they put him behind a screen, you didn't even see him, pretty sure he's going to prison for the rest of his life.
Oh, for sure. But you know what I like as the better option is that they are willing to let him cover it up. They said he should get a snappy scarf or a stylish turtleneck.
You're right. Yeah, just put him in a turtleneck the whole trial. That'd be great.
How many turtlenecks do you think this guy's worn in his life?
I'm gonna say zero.
Zilch.
Yeah.
I think if you go back 100 years in this guy's family tree, nobody has worn a turtleneck in any of them.
Yeah, I don't think turtlenecks are that popular in Kansas.
What about an ascot?
Yeah, get him an ascot. Yeah, get it super classic.
But it would be really funny if they don't change anything else in his outfits, like if he was just wearing the orange jumpsuit with an ascot.
Yeah, orange jumpsuit with an ascot. That's a look. That's a Halloween costume waiting to happen.
It is amazing, though, you know, because you do see these tattoos, you know, obviously tattoo culture is very prevalent all over the U.S., and you see these, like, face and neck tattoos, and, you know, you go, oh, well, that guy's probably not going to be working in an office anytime soon.
Yeah.
I've never really thought about it as how it could affect a trial.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, like, just with, like, gangland stuff, you know, you have, you know, the the tattoos, and they bring in the evidence that, you know, it's gang-related tattoo on their
Right, like
arm
the
and all that.
teardrop means you killed somebody.
Right. Well, actually, interesting piece of information I learned. Anybody with a teardrop tattoo should never travel outside of the country because they mean different things in different countries. So, like, in Australia, if you have a teardrop tattoo, it means you're a child molester.
Oh,
Yeah.
man.
Yeah, so it's how they mark child molesters in Australian prisons is giving them teardrops. So if you go there, as you know, I don't know how often people with teardrop tattoos are world
They're
travelers,
not
but
really big. They're not really big. Let's go, Australia, traveling the world fodder style, people, I don't think.
yeah, typically not. But you know, for that one or two small people on the Venn diagram, you know. Have some consideration. Maybe take some concealer with you.
I did not know that. That's pretty funny. I wonder where in other countries if it means even funnier things.
I bet it does, man.
Yeah. So should we move on to this next story? This one has been all over the news.
Oh, all over the place for sure.
Do you want to set this one up?
Yeah, you guys may have heard about the cattle rancher over in Nevada. You know, they got the, you know, the government was going to take his cattle, and then, you know, all the Republicans, you know, Fox News, everything jumped in behind him, rallying support. Then, you know, they made the mistake of putting him on the air and asking him questions and letting him talk for himself. And it turns out he's a racist.
Oh yeah, wow, shocker alert.
Yeah, shocker alert, super racist. And you know, now it's great to see everybody like trying to like run away from him, you know.
Sprinting, sprinting
Yeah,
away.
sprinting away from him. And then it's even better, like, you know, he had, you know, like some interview, I think it was with CNN, where he took his boot off and was like, you know, I may as well take my boot off before I, you know, put it in my mouth. And it's like, dude, where, like, are you senile? Like,
Yeah.
it's pretty shocking. But yeah, people don't make good decisions.
So, well, I think the interesting thing is that first of all, there's always this big rush to defend the anti-government sort of, libertarian group anytime, like without any context. Anytime somebody is anti-government, libertarian, and says the government's taking something away from me, it seems like there's a big rush to defend him without even like any context.
Right, it's like they don't even look into like his history or anything like that. It's like, oh, they don't like the government? We should support them.
Yeah,
Like,
it's very odd to me how it's like you don't want to defend, like you want to be against the government when it suits you.
right. You want to, like, for instance, constitutional law. You don't take all the cases that can potentially have, you know, far sweeping changes for, you know, the law. You pick and choose what case is going to be the best to, you know, get the results you want. Whereas here it's like, oh, anybody proposes any objection to the government, oh, we're going to support them 100%, full support. Everybody come out of the woodwork to help this guy out. And it's like, no, that's not the way you should do
Yeah,
that.
and as it turns out, like in 99% of the cases, they're virulent racist.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's like I feel that at this point it's got to be some sort of satire. Some of these people are just plants, like that just
Yeah,
set the
it's almost
situation.
too ridiculous, but it kind of like it doesn't even make any sense for him to be making all these racist comments. They have nothing to do with what he's arguing about.
Right. Like, yeah, I believe like the first one when he first went off on the racist tangent. Yeah, I mean it doesn't make any sense at all to go and like to get into a position where he's, you know, going off on a tangent. Nobody even asked him about the specific topic. He's just going off on a tangent, like, here, let me tell you how racist I am.
Well, that's always the funniest part. They're like, "So, how do you feel about the government, taking your land that you've been illegally grazing on?" And he's just like, "These lazy black people." It's like, where did that even play into? That's not even. We weren't even having a conversation about that.
Yeah, it's like we're giving like our senile grandfather like talking points on national
Oh,
television.
totally. If you gave my grandmother a long enough, like, platform to just speak her mind, a lot of really embarrassing stuff would be said, I think.
Right. Absolutely.
what a disgrace. But it's funny, because it's funny because like Rand Paul, who's potentially running for, president in 2016, mm-hmm. Jumps to this guy's defense immediately about legitimate constitutional issues. And then, he backs off. It's like, well, why don't you just take a minute to look into who this guy is and what he's all about before you jump to his aid for political gain?
Right. We have the internet. You can do a background search pretty quickly on pretty much anybody.
Right, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have taken you more than 10 minutes to realize maybe this isn't the guy you want to get behind.
Right, I understand it's not necessarily like the peak of intern season, yeah. But one of your interns can handle that.
Yeah. What's scary to me is that they have 1,000 armed men basically having a standoff with the government.
Yeah, that's always scary to me when there's, just all these people coming out to have an armed standoff with the government. They're just asking for trouble. It's like, guys, let's calm down.
You know who I think agrees with Cliven? Is it Cliven or Cliven?
I'm not sure, actually. I think it's, I want to say it's Cliven, but I don't know.
You know who I think probably would support him? The Clippers owner, Donald Sterling.
Oh, yeah. They own a timeshare together.
Those guys are old poker buddies, I think.
Yeah, definitely old poker buddies. Jeez.
Donald Sterling is an interesting case because he has a history of racism. He's never been caught quite as red-handed as he was this week.
Right.
I believe that there was some sort of settlement on a discriminatory housing. He's a slumlord.
Yeah. Yeah, so he wouldn't... Like, from my understanding, he was discriminating against black people and Latino people from living in the property that he owned.
Right, but that was, 20 years ago, I believe, and then he sort of cleaned up his image a little bit. He sort of stayed under the radar this entire time and actually turned around the Clippers franchise, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So it was thought that maybe this guy has changed.
Right, no, but no. Definitely hasn't actually changed.
Definitely not. So... do you have excerpts of what was actually... So basically, his girlfriend taped him saying racist stuff.
Yeah, so there's actually... I think today they brought out another tape that's out.
Yeah.
But in the first one, he was talking about... I guess she had taken pictures and posted them to her Instagram of, like, she had met Magic Johnson. And so she's like, wow, this is amazing. This is one of my heroes. I'm going to post a picture of Magic Johnson. And then so he calls her up to start complaining about how people are telling him that, like, it makes him look bad, that his girlfriend is being seen with a black man, and how it shouldn't be up on the internet.
By the way, you have to be a real extreme racist to be pissed about somebody taking a picture with Magic Johnson.
Right, it's Magic Johnson.
He's Magic Johnson. I mean, how racist? I mean, there's, like, mild racism, and then there's, like, overt extreme racism. I mean, this is like Clive and Bundy level racism.
Right. It's insane how racist they are. But so they posted it up in, like, it's a 9-minute conversation he has with her talking about, like, at some points, he's saying, like, I don't care if you're having sex with black people, just don't post pictures of them on the internet. And it's like, what kind of relationship do you guys have?
By the way, she's black and Latina.
Right. And that's the utter hypocrisy of the whole thing.
Yeah, but it also blows a hole in that white guy argument that we sometimes make. Hey, I can't be racist. I got a black friend, or I have a black girlfriend.
Yeah.
I guess apparently you can be racist and have a black significant other.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it makes him more racist. I don't know. Like, it's like, he seems like just a dirty, mean old man.
yeah, he's kind of like a monster, like an actual monster.
He does look like a monster.
Yeah,
he's
I don't know if he's human. He's like an actual monster.
Absolutely.
So, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, you think they're going to force him or try to force him to sell? See, that's the thing. He owns the team privately, but, you're in a league. You have, it's not like, owning a restaurant on your own in isolation. You have a league, which is, by the way, predominantly black. So it's very interesting to see how this is going to play out. The head of the players' union is his starter point guard.
Yeah, exactly. And then the most popular guy in the whole league, LeBron James, comes out and says that they have to do something, is pretty, vehement about it. Then the president of the United States came out and was like, yeah, guys, you have to do something. It's absolutely repugnant. So, like, I don't know, man. I'm really interested to see how this turns out.
I'm interested to see too. It's a new commissioner, Adam Silver. Our old commissioner David Stern, former lawyer, didn't take a lot of crap from anybody. So this will be Adam Silver's first moment to see, how much authority he has.
Absolutely.
But it'll be very interesting to see. I assume Donald Sterling will not make himself public for the next few weeks while the playoffs are going on at Staples.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna. I think he'll stay in his box seats as opposed to the floor seats.
Anyway, so those are the stories for today. Should we hit up the Twitter feed?
Sure, let's do it.
Let's ask people to chime in on which story do we want them to chime in on?
I'd say let's do proposed restrictions or punishments for Donald Sterling. What would you propose for Donald Sterling after all
So
this?
hashtag OLS, our only in law school hashtag OLS. Tell us what you think Donald Sterling's punishment should be. And let's look at OLS. So we had a bunch of people favoriting and following. We had Marco A, Michael Foreman, Mokumu, Hazy, Katie S, Sabrina S, Nana, Fatima Usman, Kelly, D. Red Penning, as in, wow, we're getting a lot of people. The John
Yeah.
Suf, Catherine Chu, Mangiello Law Firm, Ira, Shannon Rainey, and Law School Made Easy keeps hooking us
Yeah.
up.
Eric Berling. Who else? Law Forever Law Student. Forever Law Student. I feel sorry for you if you're still a law student after all these years. That's sad. But, 20 SB Esquire that retweeted us. That was pretty cool.
Nice. And what
Yeah.
about on our Comedians at Law feed? We have had quite a few new followers too. We had about 10 new followers. We had a TCBA LIRS, it's a public interest referral group. Brendan Mulholland, Casey Crockett, Tristan Poorman, Marissa Martinez, Chandler Brown, Sapaya, Lawpay, Bob Aaron, Frederick Vega Lozada, and Amy Impelizzeri. We'd love to hear from some of our new followers. So let us know what you think Donald Sterling's punishment could be. I think on the next podcast, we'll reinstitute giving out free tea. I think we should make new t-shirts.
I think so. I think we can get something good out there, you know?
Yeah, so we're going to make some new t-shirts. So starting on the next podcast, we're going to start giving out free t-shirts to the best response to our hashtag Twitter questions. So for this week, it's just pride on the line.
Yeah.
Tweet us about Donald Sterling. So coming up, I've got an interview with a law student, a current law student turned tech entrepreneur, Jeremy Abrams. So that's really exciting. And Matt, it's always good talking to you.
Always a pleasure to talk to you too.
All right,
Thanks, man.
thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Comedians at Law podcast. Our next guest, we're very excited to have him. He is a former lawyer turned tech entrepreneur, I guess you could say. He's got a company called Upt, which is a social app where people compete in any sort of game. They challenge each other. It sounds like a lot of fun, and he'll tell us more about it. Welcome to the podcast, Jeremy Abrams.
Hey, thanks for having me. I law student. I'm just about to graduate.
Oh, wow. So you're still a law student, and you're, man, the world is changing. You don't even need a degree to already be more successful than all of your other fellow students and lawyers out there.
Actually, my law school is really supportive of me going down this path. They've been great, so.
So you're a third year at Chicago Kent.
That's right.
Now, were you what undergrad, were you in some sort of IT field?
No, I got interested in entrepreneurship when I was 15 in school, and I just majored in communication, but I did tech entrepreneurship on the side, kind of as a hobby.
So that was always a passion of yours.
Yes.
And so then, how come you chose law school?
Because at the time I was interested in politics, so I wanted to experiment with that. And I also knew that it was really good to have a law degree for business. Never really wanted to be a lawyer until I got to law school, when you start feeling that pressure to conform and be a litigator or something like that. I tried that out, decided I really wanted to do entrepreneurship, and bounced back.
Well, I mean, I guess the good thing is you probably were able to handle all of your incorporation documents
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's actually really helps you out having to do it in the real world.
So you're graduating this year. I just want to, before we get into your company, I want to talk about, so you go to Chicago, Kent. What's the atmosphere like over there these days? Are people excited, nervous? How's the job prospects looking?
I would say it's nervous. Job prospects are definitely not what people want. There's more people I know than I probably should know who haven't found a job yet or are having trouble finding a job, and these are very good students or students who found a job doing something they don't really want to do. The school itself is great. Everyone is amazing, but the market is definitely struggling.
Does it affect the way sort of people interact with each other? Do you feel like at law school, do you feel like, people sort of, it makes people more competitive and slightly less, sort of, let me help out my fellow student?
No, actually. I think everybody at Kent, maybe with one or two exceptions that I can't even think of off the top of my head, everybody's very nice, and I've never felt like I'm head on competing with anybody.
Well, yeah, well, because you took the smart way out.
Well, that's true, but
you escaped.
I haven't observed anything that seemed like, they told us, my professor told me when I first went in our first semester that people used to take a scissors to the books and cut out cases so other students couldn't read them.
I think that's a myth. I've never seen anyone bring scissors to the bookstore.
Well, they don't want to be caught.
Yeah, well, that's true. But you know what I want to ask? We've been meaning to do this on the podcast, that we want to try and give shout-outs to professors if you are willing to. Who's your favorite professor over there?
Heather Harper is the professor that she's been extremely supportive of me, my entrepreneurial career. She's an entrepreneurial attorney at Kent. She runs the entrepreneurial clinic. And since I've started, I took her class, and she's just been great. And then Professor Hank Parrott was helped me out early on, not involving entrepreneurship, but he's a playwright. And when I first started at Kent, he was a really great person to work with.
That's cool. He's a playwright, huh?
Yeah, he is. He's a good one.
What kind of plays?
I think he basically does... I guess you'd call them dramas, fictions.
About the law or not?
He has attorneys that are included, like as characters often, but I wouldn't say that they're always focused on the law.
So let's talk about this startup. So it's called Upt. Why don't you give us the short? I don't know if I did it justice.
Oh yeah, sure. So Upt is, I don't know, some listeners might know what Vine is or Snapchat. Upt is like Vine or Snapchat, but gamified. So it's a video mobile application, video-based mobile application that allows users to compete with each other around the world in physical challenges. So imagine, for example, I like to think of a slam dunk challenge. So you have a talented friend who wants to show off his skills. He films himself doing that.
I don't have any friends who can dunk. Do you?
Well, Let's get really clear. Okay, Michael Jordan wants to do this.
Okay.
So you could even think of this almost as a promotional tool. Michael Jordan does a slam dunk challenge.
Okay.
And everyone around the world can try to compete with him and actually do it better than him.
I see.
And people vote. The community votes, and the winner gets a virtual trophy or, in certain instances, an actual prize.
Okay. So, let's just say you and I wanted to compete in I don't know, what could you and I compete? I don't think two little guys like us could compete in dunking. What could we compete?
Well, we could. It'd be really fun to watch.
Off a trampoline, if you and I wanted to compete off a trampoline. So is it one-on-one, or it's just across everybody's trying to compete for the same thing, or it's who decides what the competition is?
Yeah, so you could, right now in our very first iteration, it's going to be like challenging the world.
Okay.
You put something out there and anyone can compete, but we're working on making it so you could actually just challenge friends directly. You do something. I mean, it could be even, we've used it at parties where you just have fun games trying to, get people to, what's it called, a food toss challenge.
Oh, okay.
Like that. Okay. And it's a fun way to pass time.
And so you go on and you upload your video.
It actually, I thank you for reminding me. This is the best part is it's supposed to mimic a real life competition like a talent show. And so you get one shot to compete. And if you mess up, it automatically uploads. So even if you mess up at your attempt to do that slam dunk, the video is going to upload and everyone's going to get to see it and vote on it.
So what was I going to say about that? Somebody just interrupted me.
So every video is automatically uploaded.
Nice. Awesome. And so what's sort of the most fun thing that you've had on there so far?
We tried to do I would say for us, as we're experimenting with it, we tried to do a headstand challenge that got kind of out of control. It's really hard to do that.
Yeah, I have some CrossFit friends who always boast about their headstand abilities.
And then you see all the other friends who try to do it, and it gets pretty entertaining.
And so what's the model? I mean, what's the plan, right? So you just hope to get as many users as you can, or how does a business model these kind of things work?
Yeah, so, I mean, you see companies like Vine and Instagram and stuff, they have very simple advertising platforms. Facebook lets you like an ad, and so that's considered engagement, and companies think engagement is good. What we do is we take engagement to the next level. We're creating advertisements that users willingly want to participate in. So Nike wants to create a Nike challenge, like a running challenge or something involving their shoes, and users actually have to wear the shoes to participate in the challenge or wear Nike gear. And so in order to – so this – you know, Nike is essentially putting out this ad that actually gets users not only to just virtually engage by clicking a button, but to actually wear their gear and use their products in order to win, like, maybe a $50 gift certificate or 10% off their next purchase, something like that.
Gotcha. So then you basically are going to get hopefully sponsored by these companies.
Right. The idea is we're starting small in college campuses. We're going after local organizations, bars, and stuff like that. That want to put challenges out there to get more foot traffic into their locations.
And college kids are always up for crazy challenges, right?
Exactly.
What about law students? I mean, what's the law student challenge? What's like a what's something all the law students could want to compete in?
Yeah, that is a good question. I would be afraid to say because it probably wouldn't be that interesting.
Like
a debate or something like that.
Yeah, like memorizing the Constitution. Who can go as far?
Exactly. Memorize the full case book.
Yeah. I like that. I like that idea. We the people, whoever can go the furthest on that whole thing. That sounds fascinating.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. So you have no intentions of returning to the law, or what do you think for your future?
Well, law will definitely be applicable in entrepreneurship for sure. Whether or not I actually want to practice is up for grabs. It depends on how Upt goes. It depends on there's a lot of factors. One alternative is actually practicing entrepreneurial law in the future, which would allow me to continue to work with other entrepreneurs and doing what I love while blending with law.
Yeah. I don't know if you have noticed this trend or agree or disagree. I've noticed a lot more law students or recent law grads just going straight into app world, tech world,
yeah,
and say, I'm just going to start up an app.
For sure. I've seen it more often. I might be wrong on this, but I think some of the guys at Rap Genius, one of them might be legally educated, which is that's a cool startup.
I don't know what that is. Let's plead ignorance.
Yeah, it's like a website that allows you to look up, it's actually much more than rap lyrics, but it started as rap lyrics. You'd go to the website, look up the lyrics, and line by line you could see what those lyrics are supposed to mean, or commentary on it that users submit.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to spend a lot of wasted time on that one.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah. But I think one of those guys is legally educated, but I might be wrong.
That's so funny. So like all of Biggie's, I got to go in and find out that they're actually about, you know, some sort of, it's all about Lord of the Rings, right? No, that was Led Zeppelin. You know, Led Zeppelin is all about Lord of the Rings, right? So maybe like every rap lyric is really about, I don't know, what's a book? Hunger Games, you know?
Harry Potter.
What if, yeah, that would be really disappointing. If Drake is really just rapping about Harry Potter completely.
Well, I think that makes total sense.
Yeah, actually, it does kind of make sense. So that's awesome, man. And so you're graduating in May.
Yeah.
Do you have a a bar trip planned after the daunting bar exam?
No, man, I don't have time. I'm trying to start a company.
Yeah,
There's no
well,
time for
I
anything.
guess that's the one thing. I guess there are no vacations for entrepreneurs, huh?
Yeah, the thing is, though, that even if you try, you find you work because that's what you want to do. So it's not even possible to take a day off.
Yeah. So do you think this is a $1 million idea,
Oh,
$50 million idea, or $1 billion idea?
God, I love that question. That's something we get asked a lot by interested people. I would say I think it's 100 million plus dollar idea
I
for
like that.
sure.
Don't lack confidence, otherwise no big angel's gonna give you that big
Oh
money,
yeah,
those
for
big
sure. No,
dollars.
it's there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, if you look at other companies that are similar to ours in terms of how users engage, like Instagram, which is a multi-billion dollar company. And then you look at how we leverage user interaction with brands. You can see that our advertisements are going to be much more valuable and much more
Nice.
useful to companies. And we collect way more data, not in terms of creepy spying on, but if you think about like just an ad, like if Nike puts a product out there for users to use, they can physically see how users want to use it
Right.
through our advertisement.
Right.
It's really valuable.
Yeah, no, I like the brand integration that you're going for. I think it's a really cool and like organic, doesn't feel forced down anybody's throat kind of way.
For sure, that's the idea. We want users to want to engage because, I mean, that companies you know want to sell. So if users having an ad forced down their throat, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to want to buy the product
Yeah.
later.
Hey, Jeremy, if you find me a pair of Nikes that'll allow me to dunk a basketball, I will happily upload onto Upt.
That's the only way I could get you to do it.
I
You're
don't know. I don't
an
know.
impossible challenge.
No, I'll do a challenge. I will definitely do a challenge. You and I have to compete in something, though.
For
That's
sure.
if you think of something for the two of us compete in, I'm in.
All right, cool. I'll
Yeah.
think of something.
All right. Well, listen. I guess before we go, just I want to make sure people know how to find you guys, or what do they do? Tell them exactly what to do. Let's make it easy.
Sure, okay. So right now you could go to getupped.com, which is GETUPPD.com, to sign up for our waiting list. We'll notify you when our app is out. We'll have an iPhone app coming out in the coming weeks, and an Android app coming out just actually maybe like a week later, hopefully, if we stick to our timeline. And then after that, you'll be able to find it in both app stores.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you a really quick question about that because I've always wondered. There's some sort of approval process when you, how does that work?
Apple's approval process is actually pretty intense. They take a few weeks to review everything, and they'll send you back criticisms on, if you violate any of their terms or guidelines, and you have to modify and resubmit, and it takes time again. I'm not sure with the Android process yet because I haven't looked into it too deeply, but I hear that it's much easier, much less regulated.
Cool. Well, I look forward to seeing millions of users sign up for it.
Me too.
All right, man. Well, thank you for doing the podcast.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
That wraps up this week's podcast. So get back to work or studying or whatever you're doing. Talk to you next week, guys.